Okay, imagine you are in middle school. Now, I know if you are not in middle school, you may not want to go back and reimagine being in middle school, but try. Imagine you're in middle school where every day feels like a catastrophe. So to be prepared, you carry around a book with instructions on how to survive various calamities, how to outrun killer bees, for example, or how to survive crawling out of quicksand. But what if that book didn't have any suggestions to survive what's happening in your own life? That is the premise of Worst Case Colin, a new book for middle grade readers. So that's readers aged about 8 to 14 from local author Rebecca Caprera. And on top of it all, by the way, the book is in verse. We're going to talk about all of that. Rebecca is here in Studio 2 with us now. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I kind of fell in love with Colin. So tell us about Colin.
I'm glad you feel that way. I feel so connected to him, almost as though he's, you know, my own child. He is a boy who has a lot of anxiety, and it comes from a good place. He experienced, a fluke loss of his mother a few years prior to when the book takes place. And so he can't help but wonder what would have happened differently had someone been better prepared. And so he takes it upon himself to memorize these chapters in this worst case scenario handbook that you mentioned, so that if catastrophe strikes again, he is ready. And of course, this earns him the nickname of Worst Case Colin. But his father is, you know, a loving parent and a gifted mathematician, but he copes with their loss in a very different way. He has compulsive hoarding disorder, and that begins to spiral out of control. And so Colin really has to figure out how to navigate these situations that, like you said, don't come with an instruction manual. And I think ultimately, as the book progresses, he comes to understand that sometimes the bravest thing that we can do is to reach out and ask for help, which is not always easy.
Yeah. You know, it's striking. There were pieces of it where I thought, but of course, right? So you talk about how anxious Colin is, and we know the level of anxiety and depression that young people, adolescents, nationwide and here in the Commonwealth have been experiencing both before, but especially during and as we are maybe moving out of the pandemic. I thought the hoarding disorder piece, choosing to bring that into the mix as well, was really interesting. So why that of all things for a way for his father to be sort of letting him down or not there? And what did you want to accomplish by bringing that into the mix?
Sure. It's a topic I've been interested in for a long time. It's something I hadn't seen depicted in children's literature a whole lot. There are some books. Ellie Swartz has a book called Give and Take, and there are a few others that I'm aware of. But it was something that, as I dove into the research portion of writing the book, I was even surprised by the prevalence of hoarding disorder. Recent studies say that, you know, between 2 and 6% of the population may struggle with hoarding disorder. And a lot of those affected are kids like Colin, who have to learn to navigate kind of this daily risk of physical and psychological harm. And so I thought a lot about Colin's number one need and want in the book is breathing room, right? He wants space to sort of figure out who he is, and he needs, you know, literal breathing room too in this very clustered, claustrophobic environment at home. And so writing in verse and developing the story with those elements was kind of a rich place to play and explore.
So you just mentioned writing in verse. Mm-hmm. And the format of this book is fascinating, right? It's kind of two pieces. First, it is written in verse, sometimes sort of more traditional stanzas, sometimes kind of visual patterns to help us get the point, you know, access it better.
Right.
And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. We've got this chapter called Growth, where he's talking about kind of the encroachment of trash, of this hoarding, and the words form. I saw it as a pyramid growing at the bottom. Our producer, Sydney, thought it was the house.
Well, I'm glad it's open for interpretation. So I'm glad that you both had a different reading.
And it communicated to both of us, and I thought when I first heard the book was in verse before I started reading it, I thought, okay, our kid's going to read a book written in poetry, but it totally works. So why'd you do it that way? What inspired you to use verse?
Yeah, this is a format that I love. I think that verse novels are wonderful gateways to poetry. I wasn't even familiar with the form until a few years ago. I heard Kwame Alexander, who wrote The Crossover, which won the Newbery Prize, and I heard a keynote speech with him, and he talked with so much passion about the potential of poetry to connect with young readers. And so after that, I went and read his book and was just blown away by how much emotion and how much, you know, content and character you could fit into a story with such an economy of words. And it seemed like a really interesting challenge. And it also, like you mentioned, it can be a really accessible way for reluctant readers to get into a story, right? You're not overwhelmed by these thick, heavy right. chapters of prose. And so I think it's really appealing for that way, in that way.
So let's illustrate that, actually. So Grow is less than half a page, this chapter,
right.
with this physical shape that we just mm-hmm. discussed. We have it here, and I'd like to ask you to read it
sure.
for us.
Sure. And this poem, just to give the reader some context, it happens right after another poem that is quite sparse. So this is very dense on the page in contrast to that intentionally. So this is called Growth. Now the basement fills up. Books and binders jam and crowd already packed bookshelves. Couch cushions hide reams of paper. More magazines and newspapers than any human could read in an entire lifetime collect in piles, heaps, mountains, joined by clothing, both clean and not so clean, that no longer fits in dressers or closets. Then come bins and boxes of items that have nothing to do with mathematics, like scarves and gloves and coupons and cheese graters and broken keyboards. Spills, drips, leaks seep down through each layer, inviting mold and rot to flourish. Dust settles like snowfall, and each day there is less and less and less and less space for me. I learn to tiptoe around the house. There may be something dangerous hiding below the surface.
So that is author Rebecca Caprera reading from her book, Worst Case Colin, which is a new book for middle grade readers, grades ages about 8 to 14. I mean, when I hear you read it out loud, and I called the chapter Grow a couple times. It is growth. I think of him as growing, you know, throughout the book.
Yes, yeah.
You can hear the poetry in that. You can hear the verse. And that is striking because there is something lyrical. Do you ever encourage kids to read a book like this out loud?
Oh, absolutely. And if you ever have a chance to listen to an audiobook, Elizabeth Acevedo is a young adult author, but she has she reads her own work and performs her work, and it's just so captivating to hear. She's a spoken word poet. And so, yes, definitely read aloud. Read it on the page because, like you said, there's some elements that are visual, right? A lot of the concrete poetry that you talked about, the poems that take a certain form, those are intentional. And those are, you know, I'm a visual person. I come to writing from a background in design and architecture. And so for me, playing with the words on the page, the placement of the ink, the white space, it's just an opportunity to add layers of meaning to the story, visual layers of meaning, and reinforce certain themes or elements of the book. And so, and I really credit my editor for pushing me to take
that
really
form. To really do that.
Yes.
And that gets us to the other piece of formatting of this book, which is unusual, which is these pages. We have these pages inserted out throughout. These are supposed to be from Colin's journal of these worst-case scenarios,
right?
Like number 558 is starvation, right? We talked about running from killer bees or quicksand. It's almost comic relief. They're adorable, right?
Yes.
He's very serious about, you know, laying out what you need to do to be safe. But they also just underscore this kind of franticness of a kid trying to keep the world from attacking him.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned the sort of the comic relief. Some of them are quite serious and happen at moments, that resonate with other things. But there is an... I think when you're dealing with a book that has heavier subject matter, it's especially for middle grade readers, it's so important to keep a certain levity, right? So there's humor, there's friendship, there's these chapters, these disaster chapters that are so far-fetched. You know, none of this stuff is ever going to happen, hopefully. And I think just keeping those hopeful elements, especially for readers within this age range, just it makes a lot of sense. It's important to me as I'm crafting a story with some tougher topics.
So we've been talking about your book, Worst Case Colin, which I read in one sitting.
Oh, I think that's wonderful.
Thoroughly
Versus
enjoyed.
A quick read. Yeah,
it is. And it's interesting. You run a group for middle-aged. I got to say that correctly, middle grade readers. And you actually brought us some other recommendations, including a few from local authors. I think, you know, going into summer school and soon, let's play around with that a little bit, too. Let's talk about some of these books that your readers have really enjoyed or that you're preparing to read. You pick one to start.
Sure. So this is, like you mentioned, I run the middle grade book club at a wonderful independent bookstore in Acton, Mass. called The Silver Unicorn. We've been doing this now for about 3 years. They're just creating such a fantastic community around books, and I'm glad to volunteer and be a part of that. So one of our group's favorite books is a book called Samira Surfs. It's also in verse. It's written by Roxana Guidreau, and it is the journey of a young Rohingya girl who is fleeing Burma and resettling in a refugee camp in Bangladesh. And one of the things I especially loved about our conversations surrounding this book were the fact that the kids were able to make certain connections to other books we'd read previously, in particular when Stars Are Scattered, which is a graphic novel by Victoria Jameson and Omar Mohammed. And that is a story of two Somali refugee brothers who are settled in Kenya. And another story called The Night Diary by Vera Hirandani. And that follows a young girl, a Hindu girl, fleeing Pakistan to India in the 1940s. And so it was interesting to me that the kids, all on their own, made these connections to other books that we had read. It opened up so much, dialogue, even though the children in these stories are experiencing very different things than the kids in our group are. I feel like these stories helped build a lot of empathy. We talked about activism. It got them thinking about things they could do in their own community. And it was just really beautiful. I mean, I'm sure you know the news cycle can be a little grim at times.
Yes.
And sitting down and sharing an hour with these young people once a month, it sort of renews my sense of optimism about the world. So I'm grateful to them for that.
So for listeners who may have been frantically writing down or trying to write down all those names and those authors, I will say you brought us a beautiful long list. We will have all of it on our website at radioboston.org for people to come back to and revisit. I do want to ask about one just because the title grabbed me, which is My Life is a Potato by Ariane Costner.
Yes. So we talked about the need for levity and laughter. And let me tell you, writing funny books for kids is hard. There's no tougher critic than a middle schooler, right? They will tell you if you are, trying too hard. And this book, I think we read it right in the midst of kind of the height of the pandemic, and we just needed to laugh. You know, the kids vote on the choices. I present them with a short list each month, but they have the ultimate say in what we're reading. And we all were just craving something funny. And this is a story of, moving to a new town, reinventing yourself, and a boy who accidentally becomes his school's potato mascot. They are the Spuds. And it's a great, fun read.
All right. So you've talked about a balance here, right? Some very serious issues, some fun reads. I'm sure there are a lot of people who wonder, how much do you engage with a kid who's 10 or 11 or 12 about what they're reading, and how do you do that? So advice or guidance for people who want to read alongside their young person or aren't really sure, do I let them process that book alone, or is this a time to have a conversation? With my son, I used to often read what he was reading so I would know what was going into his head
at that age.
Talk about that a little bit.
I think it depends on the child. I have a 9-year-old, and she's recently joined our book club. And sometimes she likes to read on her own. And sometimes we read the books together, family read aloud chapter by chapter, which is fun because then my 6-year-old can also join in. Some of the books do deal with certain topics that they have questions about. And I'm always very open about that. I think that a book is a wonderful place to kind of practice readerly consent. This is an idea that author Alana K. Arnold has talked about. And if a child encounters something that makes them uncomfortable, they can close the book and they can step away and they can come back to it at a later time. And I think there's sort of a simple power in that. I think we shouldn't shy away from having these difficult conversations potentially with kids, because a lot of the things in these books, whether or not they're dealing with these issues at home, they might know a friend that is, or it just might help them be a more empathetic, understanding, citizen of the world.
Amazing that books can do that for young
yes,
people.
Yeah.
All right. So in like 3 sentences, give us one more you recommend.
Okay. Oh, this is so hard. I'm going to shout out to a local author. This is a book called Turn the Tide by Elaine Demopoulos. It's about eco-activism and plastic pollution. And she's a former writer in residence at the Boston Public Library. She teaches in town. She's wonderful. And I think this book would be a wonderful gateway to all kinds of conversations about the environment.
Fantastic. So that is Rebecca Caprera, leader of the Silver Unicorn Middle Grades Book Club in Acton, Massachusetts, and author of the middle grades novel in verse, Worst Case Colin. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
And again, we'll have those recommendations on our website at radioboston.org so that you can visit them and make your own list.